caucus and our very distinguished and honored keynote speaker this morning, Dr. Bernard Anderson of the Wharton School. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that you have heard the message that this country needs to hear from Dr. Anderson. It is unacceptable that this country should permit large sections of the population to be without gainful employment. We just simply have to start with that premise. We cannot go around rationalizing statistical evidence about the rate of unemployment and underemployment and part-time employment and job and dropping out of the job market and satisfy ourselves with this kind of an academic analysis. We simply have to come to grips with the hard facts of the loss of income, the loss of pride and dignity, and the waste, the unbelievable human resource waste that is going on in this country. Now, I have a prepared statement. I'm going to ask, Mr. Chairman, that all of its context be included in your record. And I should like to skip and jump through some of it so that we can save you time, because you have a very big program here today. The first thing is, I want to commend the Black Caucus for what you're doing. Indeed, every part of America and every state, there ought to be a similar caucus underway, black, white, brown, red, or whatever it is. We need to put our emphasis upon the tragedy, economic, social, and political, of a recession in this country and of unemployment. And there is no need for it. This has been a designed and manufactured recession. This country has the technology, it has the science, it has the management, it has the skilled labor force, it has the manpower, and it has the needs, and it has the finances to put this country back to work. But with a lack of economic policy, the zigzag up and down, in and out, that we've had for years, plus the premeditated design of being more concerned about inflation and no concern at all for years and up until only recently about recession, has resulted in this great national tragedy. So I do commend you, and I want to say that I consider the bill that's introduced by Congressman Hawkins and others here in the House, H.R. 50, and the one that I have been privileged to join in introducing in the Senate, S. 50, the Equal Employment and Full Opportunity Act, to be the most important legislation that's been introduced in this Congress since the Historic Employment Act of 1946, because it gets right down to fundamentals. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the bicentennial year with millions of people unemployed, that's a mockery. What kind of life is there for people that are on welfare, food stamps, unemployment compensation that has expired? What kind of liberty is it? What options do you have when you have no job and nobody wants you and you're told that there's no place for you? How can you pursue happiness in poverty and ugliness and degradation and deprivation? And I think that we've simply got to come to grips with what is affecting our country and not let a few soothsayers and some of these people at the top who have never known unemployment to tell us that it's really not that bad after all. The facts have already been given here of the unemployment rate. Amongst black teenagers, and not only amongst black teenagers, amongst many other teenagers. But it is an economic and social tragedy to have over 40% of the black teenagers in the inner cities of this country without jobs. And no responsible public official can accept that figure and permit it to stand. And we have ways and means of being able to cure it. A number of industries today have unemployment rates that run well over 20%. In construction and autos, apparel, textiles, and lumber. This recession has hit the experienced as well as the inexperienced, the rural as well as the urban, the young, the middle-aged, and the elderly. It's cut across industry lines. Yet in spite of the fact that unemployment today is higher than it's been since the Great Depression, this administration has consistently minimized its severity and has failed to propose a program designed to restore full employment. The Secretary of the Treasury is horrified by the federal deficit, which is of their own making, may I say. Because the deficit is not due to the fact that we've tried to do too much. It isn't due to the fact that we tried to wage too much war on poverty. It isn't due to the fact that we tried to build too many houses. It isn't due to the fact that we tried to clean up 14th Street here in Washington, D.C. And this city still stands in rubble and shambles in some areas and ought to be fixed up and cleaned up. It isn't that we've overspent on health care in this country. It isn't that we've fed our people too well. It's that this has been a manipulated recession. Because the old economic doctors have decided the way that you cure the fever of inflation is to put a large number of people out of work. And we're paying a horrible price for it. And I repeat that it is filled with all kinds of dangerous potentiality. Now, the president has said that for the people that are unemployed, it's unemployment is their main concern. But inflation is universal. It affects everybody. And I'm here to tell you that you can handle both. And we've got to be able to do it. I wonder if how many people in this panel realize that it is, if experience is our guide, the number of people who will be unemployed at some time during the year of 1975 or who live in a household with an unemployed worker will total over 70 million. That's the number of people that will be directly affected by loss of income. That's one-third of the population of this country. This means, for example, if you use past figures as a base for your calculations, which the Joint Economic Committee has done, almost 25% of the workforce will suffer unemployment at some time during 1975. And this means that 24 million workers and their families added to it could be affected, or as I said, a total of 70 million people. Let's put it in perspective. And these are the numbers the President and his advisors should be studying. The Secretary of the Treasury, as I said a moment ago, is horrified by the deficit. I'm horrified by the employment deficit. I'm horrified, if you please, by the underemployment deficit and by the housing deficit. We were building housing in the 1960s at the average rate of 1.5 million to 2,200,000 units per year. We're building it now at around 900,000. You have a housing depression. You and I know that this country needs housing, and I'm going to say what's been said a number of times. Look here, we've got a policy here in this Congress of the Export-Import Bank. And we have a policy in this Congress around the World Bank and the Asian Bank and about our development funds for aid, all of which I have supported. But it's a national policy. And in that Export-Import Bank, in order to help our exporters, which indeed helps management and labor alike, we make sure that we can compete with anybody in the world on credit for exports. And we've been loaning money by the billions, not millions, billions, at 6% interest for people to buy airplanes. And we won't loan an American citizen money to build a house at 6% interest. Now, the Export-Import Bank is a government policy. And I tell you that if you can have a bank for exports and imports, you can have a bank for housing. Just exactly the same way. It's a question of whether I do it. I'm horrified by the real deficit of this country and the estimates of the deficit by your Joint Economic Committee between now and 1980 due to unemployment is $1,500,000,000,000 of lost income that no one will ever get into their hands, that no government will ever be able to tax, that no family will ever be able to use, that no part of the industrial, manufacturing, commercial part of our economy will ever be able to touch. $1,500,000,000,000 lost income due to a continuing rate of unemployment that this administration projects to be 6% and 7% as late as 1980. Do you realize, and I know you do, but does the country realize that we're being told that we've got to get accustomed to 6% unemployment? They've taken us up from 4%, which they call full employment in other countries, 4% is an intolerable unemployment rate in Germany today. 4% is a totally unacceptable unemployment rate in Norway today, in Sweden. 4% unemployment is absolutely intolerable in Japan. But we're told here that it's supposed to be full employment. But now we're being coached. We got it up to 5%. You're supposed to get satisfied with 5% unemployment. And now they're telling you, get accustomed to it. It ought to go up to 6%. They keep raising the threshold, just like they do in nuclear weapons. It's the same sort of thing. I tell you that it's unacceptable. And there's only one way to break it, and that's for the Congress of the United States to break it. Well, you can see that I am concerned about it. Indeed, I am, and I'm going to be concerned about it until we get something done. What's civil rights? What good is a civil right if you don't have the right to enjoy life? And I want to take this caucus and this country back to what we're talking about in the bicentennial. Let's give it some real meaning. The right to life. What kind of a life? Ugly? Demeaning? The life of sickness and poverty? The life of being told you're not needed? Remember what John Stuart Mill once said. Let a man have nothing to do for his country, and he shall have no love for it. If you want people to be patriots, give them something to do for this country. If you want them to love this country, let them have a piece of the action. Liberty? Liberty means options. And some people today have no option but to live in degradation and poverty and be without work and not without a chance. Pursuit of happiness? Well, let me tell you that there's no way to be happy if you're told you're not needed in the economic life of this nation. So we have before us then a program. We've got a program. Now, I prefer that all the jobs. Be in the private sector as much as possible. But you and I know they're not going to all be there. Therefore, the government has to become a compassion. That doesn't give people justice. That's just a way to tide them over, and you and I know that we must tide them over with their health care, with unemployment compensation, with their food stamps and else, and other things. Even this government tries to cut down. The shamefulness of it. The shame of a government that would try to cut people's food back, even in their schools, and in the name of what they call fiscal responsibility. As they get an unemployment compensation check, if they were doing something that they wanted to do and that they knew how to do and that the country needed done. You don't collect taxes off of unemployment compensation. You don't collect anything. Unemployment compensation just barely gets you by if you've got some relatives that can help you. And in the conditions we are in today, crime is rampant. Disillusionment is everywhere. And people feel a sense of hopelessness. I say we've got some unmet needs in this country, and anybody with enough imagination to crawl out of a hole ought to be able to do something about it. How many thousands of new jobs could we create if we seriously tried to meet our housing needs? Now, America's not going bankrupt building housing, dear friends. Housing is collateral. If you've got a house and it's paid for, you can get some money. It's collateral. Any bank will give you a loan on it. We ought to be building housing in this country, and we ought to be building it under a national housing policy that we said we had once in 1949. And we ought to build it on a basis that people can afford to pay. It's good socially, it's good for the family, good for the community, good for industry, good for the worker. How many people could we usefully put to work if we truly tried to provide an adequate health care system for all of our citizens in this country? Thousands. Who can estimate the tremendous need for trained workers to staff our nation's daycare centers? hundreds of thousands.
Worth thousands.
Who can fail to understand the need for teachers and specialized programs in our schools? We could put to work 100,000 teachers with the mentally retarded kids of this country. We ought to. We've got reading problems in America. Children don't learn how to read. We need competence experts, and we've got teachers out here drawing unemployment compensation. Who will deny that thousands of workers are needed to take over the dilapidated and rebuild the dilapidated rail system and turn it into a safe and efficient operation? The American railroad system is of the horse and buggy vintage. It's falling apart. We ought to have people at work. We can put young people to work taking care of our forests, our parks. The American people don't have a place to stay when they want to travel now and go camping. We can build trails and roads to make life a little more beautiful in this country. There's no shortage of work. There's a shortage of will. That's what it's all about. And our bill, the bill that Mr. Hawkins has and the one that I have and the one that many of you have sponsored, is designed to give the American people a chance. Every man his chance. Every person their chance to make the most out of their life. That's what it ought to be all about. And we've got to understand that in America, people want to go to work. You offer them some jobs and they line up. When you have a little public service job in Atlanta, 10 to 15 times as many people line up to get the job as there are jobs. I'm sick and tired of hearing people say, well, they don't want to work. But I'll tell you something, you leave them for 10 years with no jobs and they'll get used to not working. So let's start spending our money where it'll do some good. The way spending for a job is not spending at all. Spending for a job is investment. It creates wealth, it creates income. It makes for dignity. It makes people feel they're a part of the American national scene. And I want to tell you, I feel so strongly about this that I think it's time that some of us in Congress started telling these economic witch doctors that we have around here what to do. If the Federal Reserve Board won't change its policies, then we'll have to change the board. Responsibly. No one is more interested in this country having a sound economy than the man that's looking at you. But I don't think it's a sound economy to write off a large number of people. You have 12% unemployment in America today. Not 8, not 9, 12% unemployment in America today. And to accept this for 1 month proves that we're politically incompetent, morally bankrupt, and economically lost in the wilderness. So I hope this message gets where it belongs. In Congress, the Federal Reserve Board, in the White House, in the Council of Economic Advisors, and unless those of us who are in Congress here are willing to put up a fight and not to be talked out of it, this thing is going to go wiggling along just like it has all the time. And next year, 2 years from now, another group of Congressmen will be around here and they say, now you've got to get accustomed to 7% on it. They're taking you up the ladder to get you down in the ditch. No way. Well, that's my message. I've got some other stuff in this little book here if you want it.
Senator, we sincerely thank you for your contribution.
Thank you very much.
He doesn't have to be at 11 o'clock.
I think we ought to introduce the hearing panelists of the press and have a little interchange with our dear colleague from the Senate. I'd like you to know that Ned Tilton of the Charleston Gazette is here. Bill Brink of the New York Daily News, Joseph Stern, editor of the Baltimore Sun, George Church, senior editor of Time Magazine, J. Lo Ware, publisher of the Atlantic Voice. We have Dexter Urey of the Boston Globe, Bruce Davidson representing the president of the Boston Globe, Representative John Taylor, is that we open ourselves up to a little discussion back and forth, Senator, to make this thing real, because we've got some real problems in connection with it. Who'd like to start off? Yes, sir.
Senator, how about the Monahan's full assistance, family assistance plan? How do you stand on that?
For it.
Any other questions?
Yes. Oh, yes, it can. They got 14-year terms. We give them 6 years in the Senate, and some people think that's too long. I think their terms could be to 7 years. Also, I think there ought to be a greater variety of membership. That ought to have to be a holding company for bankers. There hasn't been a labor man on that board. I haven't seen a farmer on that board. I have the list of the entire membership of the Federal Reserve Board since its inception. And I want to tell you, if you ever talked about economic segregation, it's there. And I think it needs to have a little better blend. That's all. Also, it needs some accountability to the Congress of the United States. I'm tired of asking the Federal Reserve Board what its money policy is going to be. I want to ask the Federal Reserve Board this question. What are you doing to accomplish the objectives of the Employment Act of 1946? What's your program? Join the team. Quit sitting off there in that pristine purity out here like somehow or another they're up there in cloud nine. They're a part of us right down here. We earthly sinful beings, you know. I want to get them down here where we belong. Now, I understand the importance of sound monetary policy. I don't want to see us just debase our currency, but we're debasing our country. The reason that we are, that this dollar of ours is going down the drain is because this country is operating at about 80% of capacity most of the time, and today it's operating at 65% of capacity. And what bothers me, may I say, all the way through the governmental and financial structure, is that we seem to be not, well, we're concerned. You know, we kind of beat our breast occasionally, not too hard, don't leave any bumps or anything. But we don't really see that this is the fundamental problem to get the country working. I have the figures in here of what's happened with Germany and France and England. Even Britain today, with all of its problems, only has about 3.5% unemployment, 3.5%, 4% unemployment. And you cannot possibly hold a country together and give it any sense of purpose when large numbers are excluded from its workforce.
Any other questions? Senator, I'd like to raise one because we're all supporters of H.R. 50, and we know personally of the great testimony and leadership you've given in this regard. Let's talk about the political implications of it. We've not had any hearings in the Senate. We haven't had the bill reported out of the subcommittee in the House. We want to try, I think, in this kind of session, as we raise the consciousness around the subject, is that we ought to develop how we as legislators are going to move on both sides of the Congress. Is there any chance that we might sit down and begin to pull together a strategy after today's session for commencing the hearings in the Senate, for getting the Democratic caucus and the Democratic caucuses of both the House and the Senate on record, and to begin to move this thing out from under the rock that you pointed out that it's under, and get it into the political sun where more people can examine it?
Yes, I think there is a strategy that we can pursue, and we must get together. The Joint Economic Committee is already holding hearings. We're not a legislative committee on the whole subject of employment and the ramifications of unemployment. We have that underway. Senator Lloyd Benson, the chairman of the subcommittee, has undertaken those hearings. And as the chairman of the full committee, we will broaden that out into a full committee hearing and full committee study. But the legislative committees are the ones that are important, and I can tell you that there's nobody more friendly to what we're trying to talk about than Senator Harrison Williams of New Jersey, who is our chairman in the Senate. I'd be very happy to meet with your whatever group you want to bring together, see if we can't lay down a program, get up some dates to start some hearings, and start to teach the American people what this program really means for us. You see, I think what's happened is people have been told this is so costly. You know, that's what they always get the big bill, how costly it is. I've tried to point out here today how costly it is not to do it. And I challenge anybody, in any publication, anywhere, to demonstrate to me that if we continue a rate of unemployment between now and the end of this decade, the 1980, that we will lose less than $1.5 trillion in income. Now, $1.5 trillion is a lot of money, even in Washington. I'll hold my weight. We don't understand those figures out. People don't understand them, but they're frightened. See, people are frightened about these federal deficits. And the Secretary of the Treasury helps frighten them. He scares them out every day. And the problem is that the federal deficit is going to get bigger all the time unless people go to work. And what I'm worried about here is that you're going to get some kind of what looks like an economic recovery, in the sense that you get it looking a little better for about a year in the gross national product. But in the meantime, you continue to build up the level of a really chronic unemployed in this country. And then what happens? Then the people that are the fiscal responsible people, quote unquote, come in and say, we're spending too much on welfare, we're spending too much on food stamps, we're spending too much on this and that, and why? Then the answer that we try to get back, which we don't apparently do too well, is that the reason we're spending too much is that there isn't anything for these people to do. We had one time the old WPA. Everybody gave it a rough go, but I want to tell you something. They built some courthouses. In the bicentennial, what they're doing now, they're looking at the histories that the people that were unemployed teachers wrote as historians of the counties. I just was out in my own county Sunday for the dedication of our Wright County Historical Society building. And where do you think they got the history of that county? From those old WPA projects.
Senator, I've never interrupted you before.
Go ahead, I'm wound up.
Right.
We had a tornado out home yesterday. I just got out.
I'm glad that you survived it. The point that I'm working toward, and we want to recognize two of your other colleagues that are here who have a brief remarks that they want to make. The point that I think that is so imperative as we congratulate you is that the fact is that this hasn't been put in a political perspective since the 30s. We discussed school employment once before. The World War II came and it took us into some temporary prosperity, and the subject became moot. It was unpopular, it was unfashionable for all the reasons that you've suggested. I think we have to identify a strategy and to begin moving it, and no one can help us more effectively than yourself. George Mahon, the chairman of appropriations, was here. We need to get our Senate, our House, and House leadership all involved in this, so that we're not going to continue to lecture to the converted anymore. We're going to move this forward in the appropriate legislative bodies in the House and the Senate, and I think you're going to be one of those leaders that we have looked on so much in the past that we'll continue to look on as we focus upon what we consider all here today to be the most single important piece of legislation that will move us out of this depression.
I'd like to, Mr. Congressman, to ask those who are here from the media and those who utilize the polling services of the country, we have many very reputable polling services, or the newspaper and television themselves, ask the American people this question. Would you rather have the government of the United States provide work for the unemployed, or would you rather have the government of the United States provide food stamps and unemployment compensation? And I'll take all bets right now. I know that the people want work. And we're just missing the boat, that's all. We don't even understand the politics of it.
Thank you very much, Senator Hubert Humphrey.